Okay, welcome into another episode of That's
So Cincinnati.
You're scaring me, Phil. I'm Jason Williams, co-host, along with my co-host, Sharon Coolidge. Back again, Sherry. How are
you?
Hello. Got a big show today. Aren't they all big?
Yeah, I mean, obviously.
Talking FC Cincinnati, more FC Cincinnati Stadium conundrum. Audience, you can't get enough of it. We're here for you to deliver you the latest news. Sherry is all over this story, which she has been from day one, and she continues to be all over it. We have former Congressman Steve Driehaus as our special guest today, so looking forward to chatting with him. He's now a political consultant and has his hand in a lot of different political things in and around town, around the state, and so I'm looking forward to, I always have spirited conversations with Steve, and looking forward to doing that behind the mic today. Sherry, what do you got for us today?
Well, like so many things, but I would say that, you know, there was a big surprise over the weekend about FC Cincinnati's tax incentives. You know, it's almost like the never ending saga. It's like the soap opera of getting this FC Cincinnati stadium built, which you think after a majority of council vote would be easy, but it has turned at every single turn. There's been a problem. And here we are. You know, we've been saying for a long time they've gotten $35 million in tax incentives to help build the infrastructure, something that's not that abnormal for big development projects in the city, like help with the building of things. It's been super controversial, but okay, that's where we're at. And it turns out that there's a needed second vote for half that money, which is hotel tax money. And there is a big fat sticking point on this one, and that's kind of unfolded over the last 2 days.
So of the $35 million that the city approved in city tax, the city hall gave the stadium $35 million for infrastructure-related part of the project. That was last year. So $17 million of that $35 million comes from the local hotel tax. So take us up to so what you're saying, Sherry, is that all that stuff wasn't really all the I's weren't dotted and the T's weren't crossed back then. Is that what you're saying here? Is that
really what's coming to light. There was a promise in theory that the county has to agree in the city on how this money's spent. It's like a whole region tax. And everyone was like, great, we support FC Cincinnati. Sounds like a good use for the city's portion of the hotel tax money. And it seemed like a done deal. And I mean, city council voted on it. That tends to be a done deal. But you need to have the convention facilities authority. I've said that sentence like a million times over the last couple of days. I'm intimately familiar with this board now because it's like a little known board. And it turns out it's pretty much county controlled, and they want some promises from the city that the city's not willing to make, and it has put a hold on the tax money that the team needs right now.
It's a pretty in the weeds thing, right? I mean, the overriding piece here, though, is that if I could say from the political standpoint, is you've got more city county headbutting going on right here. Am I correct in saying that?
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, Scott Wortman, our county reporter, you know, I'm like covering the building of the stadium, and I was looking at it from that standpoint and really in my head, like, what does this mean for the stadium? Because this is the first, there's been so many like crying wolves. This is going to stop the stadium project. This is the thing that actually could do that. And in fact, the team has been extremely quiet on that, which is unusual, showing just really how important this money is. And so, but the county reporter immediately was like, this is another fight between the city and the county.
So the authority, the convention authority met yesterday, and what did they, so right now they have to, the authority has to approve the $17 million in hotel tax money, which currently, what the city uses about what, $1.2 million a year from the hotel tax to help.
That's like the residual amount that doesn't go to debt on other things and the big things. And so, and then you can spend it any way you want. The county gets some residual too. And they can spend it any way they want. And no one is against it for the stadium. But the sticking point is, as the agreement of spending is written now, that the city has agreed to help the Sharonville Convention Center in case the hotel tax ever falls short. And this was a promise that's made and in the agreement now. And to change it to include FCC, they got to rip up that agreement and write a whole new one. And everyone's like, great. We just thought we would change one sentence. It's like the money's going to FCC now.
Yeah.
But instead, they took out the language that would help Sharonville. And the
they
county,
being City Hall, someone at the city.
Yeah, in the legal documents and some sort of the legal process, it disappeared.
So John Cranley and his administration.
Correct. And John did actually weigh in on this, and he was very tough about it.
But he's blaming the county.
He's blaming the county, and the county's firing right back and blaming him.
So what's he saying? What's the county's problem here?
They just want this promise that the city is going to help Sharonville. And they're going back to the idea of why we have all this in the beginning. They're supporting the Duke Energy Convention Center expansion. And the county sees it as like our hotel tax helps the city convention center. And so just in case we ever need some help, the city needs to promise to help the Sharonville one, which is in the county. And they see it as like a regional thing. And honestly, that's like a regional cooperation that's been working for years.
Regionalism, schmegionalism.
I know. We talked about this yesterday. I've been covering shared services. I've been here since the end of 2002. I cannot tell you how many times I've written about shared services only to see them not happen. And now what's going to happen, Jason? Tell us. Would you hear?
Yeah, there's going to be start to be discussions about between the city and county about shared services. Denise Tree, I almost called her Steve's, Steve's sister, Denise's brother, Denise Treehouse Commissioner, and Greg Landsman, city councilman, are in the process of starting to discuss this, and they're going to just start on a very granular, small level. And we're even talking about diving down into like simple things like fire hydrant maintenance across the county and see how they can all kind of work together to try to eliminate. Just start small.
I literally cannot tell you how many times I've heard this, and it seems so easy. Of course, I've heard this very issue, and it never happened. And it's like, it's just, there's just not this agreement. There's power structures in place, and these kind of things never happen because, you know, shared services means the loss of power for some parts
exactly.
of it. But money savings, it's extremely important, especially now where we're seeing deficits in both the county and the city budget, which back when I was covering this before, shortfalls in the budgets, like that's not new. And I don't understand why we cannot make this happen.
I will say you're exactly right. It's about giving up power. And I will say this is, we've had so many examples in over several years, but especially lately, about the need for more city-county cooperation. I've had people, sources tell me that they've never seen the relationship this bad, and that it's an example of, so that all Democrats now control the commission and City Hall, and yet this is proof that power trumps partisanship in some ways, and whether, you know, there's two sides to this story and one side blames the other and whatever. But this convention thing and this stadium thing is yet another example of, I think, why this region or this city and Hamilton County need to be taking steps toward a metro government. I will say this, and I know these conversations have gone on forever, long since I came here. Sherry, you've been covering it forever. You've been hearing about it. I will say, at least say this, I think the right two people from both entities are having this discussion. I think Denise Treehouse, I wrote this last year, that I think Denise Treehouse is the right person from the county to have this discussion. I think Greg Landsman is the right person from the city to have it. You know, I commend them for at least trying to, you know, make some moves on this.
I agree, because that's all you can do. You can't just be like, okay, it failed. Even if it failed, whatever, 100 times. You got to keep trying. These are two new people. And so give it a go again.
I had someone tell me last week or a couple weeks ago, I can't remember who it was now, but said they think it's going to take just someone, a complete outsider, to get elected. And at the commissioners and at City Hall to basically just come in and say, you know, the heck with whatever you guys have been doing, and we're going to get together and we're going to blow it all up. Good luck on that, because outsiders rarely get elected, and around here anyway. And but in the post-Trump era, again, we can't assume anything, and anybody, I think anyone can win in these times. Let's shift back to the FCC. Oh, go ahead.
No, you're right. We need to finish that conversation just say where we're at, which is to say nowhere new. It's like it's just a lot of talk still.
Exactly. It's all talk. We're still having lots of headbutting on lots of things. MSD, the Banks concert venue, the FC Stadium. Keep on going down the line. Those are just things that are at top of mind right now. Let's shift back to the stadium. And what I want to ask you, Sherry, is how are we at a is this the biggest issue yet with the stadium? Are we at a point where, what if they don't get this $17 million? Because right now I see everyone digging in. You've got the county folks on this authority who basically have the majority of people on it, and they're dug in. And then you got Cranley downtown who's saying, you know, fighting, and he's dug in. What's going to happen here? What if – I know we've come to compromises before, and you can – we fight, and then in the end, something happens, and something gets worked out. But what do you think is going to happen here?
To me, this is the biggest issue yet, and this really could be a big stopper. Everyone's hopeful that they could work things out, but they've been talking about this for months, and neither side is budging. And so I don't know what 2 days or 1 month is really going to get, because everyone, they have their feelings about this. And I don't see – it would take a major shift on one side, not just a little bit of give here or a little bit of give there. Mm-hmm. It's like this is a major sticking point. And a lot – you know, I like to say, of course, and I think it's perceived that, you know, Carl Lindner III, the majority team owner, you know, he's almost a billionaire. He is a billionaire. One of the richest people in Cincinnati, if not the richest. And it's like, well, then he should just pay the $17 million. But that's not how businesses work. Businesses work because they have a business plan, they lay it all out, and this is what it's going to take. And we're at, like, the $17 million gets to the bottom line of the stadium, and it was promised to them.
Right.
And so it's part of their business plan. Even if you're a billionaire, I don't think you can just be like, oh, well, it's $17 million, and we'll just pay that instead. Okay, thanks, everybody. That is not what this is. I think this could be a real stopper and a possible lawsuit.
Okay. A stadium stopper. What do you mean by that? Like that they'll just delay the stadium until, or they'll just stop construction on the stadium?
Well, if there's no money to do the work and buy the sewer pipes and the water lines and pay the workers to do this infrastructure work, and we're in the infrastructure work right now.
Yeah.
Like that's the phase we're at. Then yes, then I would just stop if there's no money. Money makes that all go around.
And then what's the fallout of stopping then? That it's delayed,
delay
the opening
on
is
the
delayed.
Stadium.
And the team will get penalized by Major League Soccer, right? So then...
Yes, and I do think for the project itself, it's like, this is a great thing for the city. I think everyone agrees. The county and the city, like, that's not really just my opinion. A lot of people say that is the overarching thing. This is great. We want this big development. We want a third Major League team here, and it's good for the city. It's all these underlying issues where people, the problems pop up, and this is just another one of those.
I think you're right, Sherry. Here's the thing. The argument about these are billionaires, millionaires, and whatever, rich guys and ladies and all that, that argument has sailed. Like, if you wanted to make that argument when FC started coming to City Hall and the county and asking for taxpayer money back in, what was that, late 2017,
yes.
mid 2017, or what was fall 2017, if you wanted to make that argument then, okay. But now this was money, this is $17 million already voted on and promised to the team. And so they have every right to this money. And
of all the incentives, say what you want. Part of the incentives was the cash from the sale of the Blue Ash Airport. Could it have been used for something else? But the hotel tax of all things. The stadium's going to bring outsiders to see the games. It's soccer's an international sport. The hotel tax is actually the best incentive for something like FC Cincinnati if you're going to give incentives. I mean, if you look at the Orlando Stadium, which I've been taking a look at in the last couple weeks, it's $20 million in tourism taxes are going to help that stadium, is something the city committed. Because of tourism.
And these are taxes that outsiders pay, that not us here who live here in Hamilton County or work in Hamilton County or both pay.
Right. So there are things like this. And honestly, Major League Soccer is going to put us on an international stage. I can see commenters from people around the world on just stories we write. People are paying attention. We're the newest team. There is such an intense interest in soccer worldwide.
I'll tell you what, it's frustrating to come into this booth, and it's not frustrating to come into this booth, but it's interesting to come in here, and we've had this discussion many times on this episode. It's like deja vu all over again. We continue to have, you think that you're making progress on the stadium and that things are, okay, finally it's done.
Yes.
And then something else comes up and you realize like, oh, that was something that should have been arranged 11 months ago, 12 months ago, or wasn't that done 13 months ago? Well, or
this came to me over the weekend. So, of course, I'm working over the weekend. News never stops, and I wouldn't have it any other way.
No,
and,
you would know,
my husband, Alex, who works here, like sometimes he works at home on the weekends, and that's not unusual for us. But he's like, are you writing another story about what's going on with the displaced people? And I explained to him, I was like, no, this. And he's like, is this a new issue? I'm like, yeah. It is.
And the ultimate takeaway here is, I think the lesson learned is that trying to rush major urban development projects, trying to rush them through, is not the right way to go about it. I blame everyone. Everyone bears some blame here. The team bears some blame.
Major League Soccer put the deadline in.
The deadline in, without realizing a lot of the nuances and the politics and the potential displacement, and that, you know, we said this before on here. These massive urban development projects are very, very rare. When you're trying to put in something this big in an already built out urban neighborhood, if we were going to do this probably the right way, where you have this is probably I literally like a 3 to 5 year process.
Definitely. But you know what? There was a lot of timelines put in place because it's competitive to get an expansion team, and no easy, you know, shake. And a lot of people didn't think we were going to get it. And a lot of this is based on our fan support. I mean, still, you know, 28,000, 30,000 fans are turning out to these games. There was such support here that kind of propelled us into, you know, putting us into the running. And you do have to grab your chances when you can. Also, the expansion team cost $150 million the year we did it. Now it's $200 million. So I'm sure that was probably, you know, a little bit of incentive there to rush things along. But you take your chance, and we did. And it's too late. We did.
Right.
We did.
Right. And now, yeah, we just keep going over and over. And I feel like I'm repeating myself now. So let's get the heck out of this. Let's, Sherry, thanks for... What I want to say is we'll continue to look forward to your coverage on this. Folks, keep checking Cincinnati.com. Sherry's Twitter is at Sharon Coolidge on Twitter. She's all over this story. I think you got even meetings today about FC Cincinnati Stadium stuff. So looking forward to more coverage on this. Let's shift gears and bring in former Congressman Steve Driehaus. Okay, welcome in our special guest this week, former Congressman Steve Driehaus, who's now managing partner of Good Government Group, a downtown political consulting group. Steve, welcome in. Thanks for doing this.
Appreciate
it's good
it.
To have you. Good to see you. Always enjoy our spirited discussions about politics, and you're always candid about it, and I always appreciate that about you. So,
well, thanks. I've been at it for a long time.
Yes, you have. I want to ask you what you're up to these days. You came home, you spent almost, what, How many years were you in the Peace Corps?
Well, I was running the Peace Corps in Swaziland and Morocco for 6 years.
Yeah. And that, so you'd left Congress in at the turn of what, 2010, 2011?
Yeah, 2011.
And then went into the Peace Corps and ran.
Ran our program for 4.5 years in Swaziland, another year and a half in Morocco. Then my son was entering high school, and we decided it was time to come home. Typically, you can only work for Peace Corps for 5 years.
Okay.
That's in the law. I was actually on an extension at that time, and we just thought it was the right time. We wanted our son to start high school here in Cincinnati. His sisters had both been educated overseas, and it was just time for us to come home.
You've been back year and a half, 2 years?
Almost 2 years.
Okay, because I remember you came back. You came back right around the time Denise was elected, right?
Right after
before.
That.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah, she had been elected already.
Okay. Oh, that's right. You came back in 2017.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then you come back and you start Good Government Group with your cousin Bob Driehaus.
Who's a former journalist.
Former journalist. Yep. Cincinnati Post, WCPO. Was actually, I worked at the Cincinnati Post as a sports writer, was our union rep there when I was the 4 years I was there. Mm-hmm. And then you have fundraiser
Kevin Tye.
Mm-hmm. And so
it's more than fundraising. It's
that's one of his specialty areas. So you guys launched that, and what are some of the things you've been doing with Good Government Group?
Well, I've been running the mayor's immigration initiative, Cincinnati Compass, which I'm stepping down from because I, you know, told the mayor that I'd be happy to get this thing up and running, and we've done it. I've run it for about a year and a half now, and that's the welcoming initiative between the chamber, the mayor, and a bunch of other groups to welcome immigrants to greater Cincinnati. So Brian Wright and I have been working on that for the last year and a half, and I think we've got it to a good place right now, and so I'm stepping down from that. But I'm also doing some other initiatives. I've done some work overseas in Ghana and Iraq. I was training the Kurdish members of parliament, the Kurdish members of the Iraqi parliament a couple months ago. I was supposed to go to Baghdad next month, but given the security situation, it's a little precarious, so I'm not sure that that's going to happen.
I had no idea you were doing
It's interesting because it allows me to remain involved in international affairs while at the same time calling upon my own experience in government and politics. If I can marry those things, that's what I'm trying to do. And so I'm trying to continue to do some work as well in South Africa. And while at the same time looking at regional issues here, that I think need attention and to see if we can't help. Because you know, one of the challenges I saw when I was an elected official is that, you know, be it in the state legislature, be it in Congress, you go from issue to issue to issue, you know, be it transportation or taxation, education, you go from one issue to the next. And very few elected officials have time to really concentrate on complex issues.
Yeah.
And issues that matter a lot when it comes to public policy, you know, that they're expected to vote on. But to dig deep and solve some of these problems is a challenge. And so what I want to do is put myself out there and say, hey, look, I know all the players. I know these issues. I have the ability to spend the time. I'm not running for anything. Mm-hmm. And I'd like to help you, you know, work on some of these issues. So we'll see. We'll see how that goes. It's, you know, I've had some conversations with folks about various things, and I think it's moving in the right direction.
Let me ask you about your work overseas in Iraq. Mm-hmm. When you're working, what's the biggest challenge when you're trying to? I mean, you're really trying to teach basic democracy, right? I mean, democracy 101.
Well, I was working with NDI, which is the National Democratic Institute, which is a great organization. They were initially funded by Congress and are now funded by governments across the world, and they work on governance reform as well as democratization. And, you know, democratization takes different forms in different countries, but we stand for certain principles. And so in this case, we were working in Kurdistan, and Kurdistan is an independent region in northern Iraq. The Kurdish people, however, also live in Turkey, in Syria, in Iran, and Iraq. And so there are these pockets, relatively large pockets across the Middle East. But they have representation in the Iraqi parliament. So I was working with those members of parliament, but then also training the Kurdish parliament themselves. And it is about basic things. It's a constituent services. It's about turning policy ideas into legislative language, mm-hmm. How to adequately represent, you know, town hall meetings, things like that, basic stuff.
Yeah.
But a lot of these folks are first-time legislators. And what's really interesting is that being a member of parliament is more like a reward for a lot of people that have worked in politics for a long time, and they don't run for re-election, which is tricky, because if you're trying to incentivize someone to get out there and do good constituent work and really do a good job of representing their district, if re-election is not an incentive, mm-hmm. then what is? And,
right.
and for them, right. for them, reputation, as well as the party and building the party are two key factors in why they would want to get out there and work on behalf of their constituents. So we had some fascinating conversations, and it was really, really interesting. I look forward to going back and working with the Sunnis and the Shiites in Baghdad. It's the security situation is a little tenuous right now, mm-hmm. given the situation
yeah.
with Iran.
Yep.
But I hope to get back there soon.
I love that. I mean, your hands in so many different, I think that's cool. Like I didn't even, you know, you and I have chatted a lot. I didn't know that was some of the work you've done, but I, you know, with your experience, in politics at the local, state, national level, your work that you're doing here now with Good Government Group, the work you did in Africa, it seems like this kind of all coming together and the work you're doing.
It's a little tricky. it's a little tricky to put it all together. But yeah, I try.
Yes.
Yeah. You know, to the extent that
and
I
you're
can.
Passionate about it.
Mm-hmm.
Let's shift now. Let's shift to really come back to Hamilton County and, excuse me, Greater Cincinnati. You guys also do work for local candidates and mm-hmm. In the area, and I know you did work for Jill Schiller in the congressional race last year, and you know you have several state rep candidates and mm-hmm. local candidates. I want to ask you about 2020, and when we think about local politics in 2020, we got the sheriff's race is going to shape up to look like a pretty big race in the primary at least, and then kind of the creme de la creme of local races is going to be this prosecutor's race. How do you see that shaping up? And you're in this, you're down there on that granular level, and you see where all these different, how the shifting of Hamilton County has gone. How do you see, we'll keep it in the prism of the prosecutor's race, because I think all eyes are going to be on that in local politics. What are your thoughts on Joe Dieter's race and if it's Gabe Davis or whoever else it is?
Well, I think that's likely to be a very, very close race.
Yeah.
It's going to be a very competitive race. I think Dieter's will obviously have a fundraising advantage. Let's hope that that's the premier race and the county commissioners are boring races.
Yes, yes.
Because you've got two of those as well. You know, when I look at the county reminds me demographically and politically a lot of what the city of Cincinnati looked like 20 years ago. The city of Cincinnati, you had a good mix of Republicans and Democrats on city council. The county was solidly Republican. Now that has changed.
Yep.
You now have a good mix trending Democrat, which is what the city was doing at the time, trending Democrat and now solidly Democrat. You saw that happening 15 to 20 years ago in the city. You see that now happening in the county.
Yep.
As you look at the northern suburbs, especially, and you look at the demographic changes, and the political dynamics up there, it's changing rather dramatically. I now live in Springfield Township. Springfield Township, I believe in the last election, every precinct went Democrat.
Yep.
Which is unheard of in Springfield Township, similar to Wyoming. And then you see places like Glendale and Sharonville and Evendale, you know, shifting, and not the whole thing, not the total entirety of the jurisdictions, mm-hmm. but a precinct here, a precinct there, a good portion of Coleraine Township is now Democratic.
Blue Ash, which
was unheard of. Blue Ash. And of course you have places like Forest Park that have been Democratic for a long time. But that area of the county, that central corridor along the highways and west of the highways, actually.
Kind of up 75 from the
side
Cross County Highway and up 71 from the, well, more up 75.
Right.
Kind of either way, yeah.
So you're seeing, and what's an interesting fact, I was looking at some numbers from the congressional races this time and then 4 years ago to compare off-year elections.
Mm-hmm.
And some of it may have been the top of the ticket for the Democrats and the fact that not many Democrats were coming out to vote. But Shabbat in the first congressional district received 10,000 more votes in Warren County this time than he did last time. So 10,000 more votes. That's a lot of votes.
Yep.
And I don't think that can be explained simply by who's at the top of the ticket. I think you saw heavier turnout, obviously. But I think you're seeing a significant population shift so that Warren County is growing. Mm-hmm. Warren County is growing rather dramatically, and that's flight from Hamilton County. And so, you know, the demographics have changed. I think Hamilton County is pretty blue at this point. Another interesting fact in the last election was the turnout. You know, everybody thought, you know, Democrats are going to turn out in droves as a, you know, as a reaction to the president. And they did, and they turned out well, but not as good as you might have thought in Hamilton County. What was interesting to me was the turnout in Greene Township. The turnout in Greene Township was exceptional. And that, if I'm a Democrat looking at that, I say Republican turnout off year election, exceptional. Wow, that disturbs me and that it's so high. However, if that's as good as they get and the county goes all blue, then they better watch out. You know, in a presidential, watch out. Because the Democrats tend to turn out in presidentials more so than the Republicans. And I think you're going to see this trend of Democrats picking up seats in Hamilton County just continue.
What do you attribute this trend to? And were you seeing it even back when you ran? Were you even seeing it back in the early 2000s when you were in the state legislature?
Well, in the state legislature, I represented first the west side of Cincinnati and Delhi Township, and then the districts were redrawn, and most of my district was in the city of Cincinnati. And that district was marginal, might have been slightly – it was Democratic, I think. It was maybe 50-50, but I think it was pretty good Democratic district. I think you saw some of that happening at that time. But like I said, the biggest changes have been in the northern suburbs.
Yeah.
And that, I think, has happened over the last 10 years or so.
Okay.
And I don't think that's changing. I don't think that's reversing. So I do think the trend in Hamilton County is to be blue. I think what you're going to start seeing in years to come is that many of the political fights are no longer between Democrats and Republicans, but amongst the Democrats.
Yeah.
And who's vying for what in a primary. And so I think... as the years progress, you're going to see more and more elected officials that are Democrats who are being challenged in primary elections.
What do you, having grown up in a large Democratic family, Cincinnati, Hamilton County family, you guys were in, your family was in the political minority, really, for so long.
For most of my life.
Yeah, right. As you laugh. And did you ever think that this day was going to come where, you know, obviously we saw the city, but where the whole county is, you know, now a Democratic county?
I don't know. My dad ran for Congress when I was two. So I've been at this for a long time. And really, I don't care. It's not so much to me the partisan split of the county and if it's more Democratic or it's more Republican. I would like to see elected officials focus on governance and good governance. I think we spend far too much time on the, you know, political part of it and the D's and the R's, the blue and red. And I wish we would focus on electing people who have the best interest of the constituents of Hamilton County, the constituents of Cincinnati in mind, and who really work hard to be good at government, to understand what governance is, to do it well, and to do it humbly. And that's a tough thing for elected officials.
Yeah.
But I've, like you said, I spent a long time in politics and elected office, and you know, I saw some really good people, both at the state level and in Congress. And then I saw some people that were just, you know, out for themselves.
Yep. On both sides.
And that's unfortunate. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, this is, trust me, this is nonpartisan.
Yeah.
So I would really like to see people, focus on governance, focus on, you know, moving the city forward, moving this county forward and working on, some challenging, you know, issues that we have in front of us.
And, you know, as you say that, the name, and I'm not saying this because she's your sister, but the name that pops to mind is Denise, who is really focused on that. And I commend her for that. And I think she's the kind of person who is focused on good government. And we need to multiply.
That might have something to do with us being raised in the same household. So maybe we have the same mindset because of our parents. And I really attribute it to them. I mean, I think Denise politically thinks a lot like I do. We come to the same conclusion without ever talking to each other relative to political issues. And I think we tend to be focused on solving problems and moving things forward. And I think a lot of legislators hopefully work in that direction. But it takes a lot of work to educate yourself on the issues. And to really get out there and listen to the people and move things forward. But I think Denise is doing a good job. I think her focus continues to be in the right place. I mean, what happens is too often is people get waylaid by donors. And I mean, you look at the bill, the energy bill in the state legislature.
Example.
You know, there was an article today about, you know, I think First Energy gave $150,000 to Republican candidates, and now they've got this bill possibly coming to a vote today in the House, that's a bailout for the nuclear plants that First Energy owns. And now a study's come out saying, you know what, they don't even need it. Mm-hmm. And in the same breath, in the same legislation, they're wiping out the renewable portfolio standards that we worked so hard to get into, to get the state of Ohio to adopt. And they're getting rid of incentives for solar and wind, which I think is just atrocious in this day and age when the science is clear that climate change is a problem, that we should be shifting away, especially from fossil fuels. And we're going backward. And one could suggest that there's easily, you know, if you connect A to B, it looks pretty clear that First Energy paid a lot of money to try to get this legislation to move forward. And that's unfortunate. It doesn't seem to be in the best interest of the people of the state of Ohio. It's not what the people of the state of Ohio want. And I hope that they come to their senses and make some adjustments.
How many? There's 7 Driehaus kids?
8.
8.
Mm-hmm.
And you and Denise, two went into politics?
My brother Don ran for city council quite a few years ago. Lost.
Okay.
And
Don's the oldest. Yeah,
he's the oldest.
Yeah.
And my brother Dan is involved in various capacities.
And he's on the city's planning commission.
He's the chair of the planning commission at the moment. The other 4 get involved around election time, but are lower profile. They serve the community in different ways. Teachers.
And everyone's here, right?
No, I've got a brother who lives in New York and a sister who lives in Louisville.
Okay. How many? And your mom still lives in the same house you guys grew up in?
Well, she moved across the parking lot at St. Antoninus. So
she did. Okay.
We live about a block away from where we grew up.
Do you guys, how often does the whole all 8 get together, or everyone get together?
More often than you'd like. Okay. I mean, frequently. I mean, we see each other a lot. You know, one of the reasons for coming back here is because we've got a great family and my mom has 23 grandkids.
That's what I was going to have.
My 3 kids being 3 of them. And so, you know, the cousins all get along really, really well. And, you know, it's great for them. They love being around each other. And you know, we don't have, you know, it's not one of those families where people don't talk to each other or things like that.
Yeah.
We get along fine. And we see each other all the time.
And I was out grabbing a beer with Denise and her chief of staff, Alex Linzer, back in maybe February. And here comes a lot of the Driehaus crew, and it was you and Don and your brother, who is is he a guidance counselor?
Joe Elder. Mm-hmm.
And it was just fun, like, to sort of be a fly on the wall to, like, watch you guys interact. And then I talked to Don for a while, and he was telling me old political stories about when your dad was involved in politics. So
there were a lot.
That has to be a lot of fun, just sharing all these old war stories about political and going out. And
well, for those that are into politics, maybe I think for the average person, they find it kind of boring.
Are all the Driehaus kids, you know, you guys aren't kids anymore, but are you guys all, like, into politics? Like, I mean, as a whole,
my mom is the worst. My mom is obsessed with politics. Believe it or not, I don't engage that much in political conversations. And most of us don't. I mean, Denise likes to talk about the county, obviously, but we do from time to time if people engage us, but my mom's the one that, really follows politics closely.
Does your mom still get out and campaign?
She's 84 now, so she doesn't do as much campaigning as she used to. But
she wasn't out knocking doors for Denise.
She regularly calls me about various political issues that are, you know, on the horizon.
Well, Steve, thanks so much for coming in. This was a great chat. I know it's a quick. We could talk for 2 hours about this stuff. I always enjoy talking to you and chatting politics and government, and really appreciate you coming in. Thanks so much.
Sure. Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Thanks to Steve Driehaus for stopping in. It was a great chat with him. Always enjoy talking politics with the former congressman. So thanks for that. Let's shift gears, have a little fun. Sherry, did you go to Taste of Cincinnati this past weekend?
I did not, although to be fair, I usually go at least one day.
I don't get it. I don't get it. I know it's...
You know, if there's anything that's so Cincinnati, come on.
Cincinnati.
So...
It's Taste. This is a tradition here in our city. I mean, I don't think there's anyone I know other than you and myself that didn't go.
I know every city has a taste of wherever that place is.
Ours is the best, though.
And ours is great. I just don't understand food festivals that feature food from your place. Like, I understand, like, if you're featuring, like, food that's not from your city. But this is, you know, I even heard on the radio over the weekend, it's like, you go to Taste of Cincinnati and the La Rosa's line is just, like, a mile long. And it's like, you can walk down in any area of this county or this region, you can walk a couple blocks and get to La Rosa's and it's cheaper. But so I understand going together
and drinking beer. People lay out their plans of the food they're going to eat and, like, they incorporate some of their Cincinnati favorites. But I think honestly, part of it is to find the new restaurants. At least it is to me. You know, I said already today, I came here at the end of 2002. You know, that was not a good time for our city. And it was a hard time to move here and understand what Cincinnati was and even could be. It's so night and day right now. But it was easy to start going to, oh, here's a new restaurant. And you could go to them and it happened kind of slowly. Then all of a sudden there's just this explosion and there's so many places we have not been. And I love to try these things. And Taste is like, it's all right there, right in front of you.
As always, I have a quick in and out one-off hot take and you have to make sense of it all. Just like we do at our desk when I'm like firing off hot takes on whatever political and non-political and sports, and you always have the context.
I know, we're the yin and the yang though, because sometimes like I'm just like I'm on 20 and you're like dial it back.
I do think it's a wonderful event. I just I've gone before and it's fine. Like I just give me a Reds game or give me a beer on my back patio with my neighbors and buddies. And
so, I mean, I was not feeling that great this weekend. So I was home on Saturday night and I think we had texted a little bit earlier and then we got a group text from our boss, Burl Love. And what was that group text?
Tickle pickle.
Oh, yeah.
Tickle pickle.
Holding up his food from there. Honestly, I wanted to kind of get up and go downtown. It looked so good.
Loyal. Long time, and I say long time, going back to September when we started this adventure, listeners of the TSC know all about Tickle Pickle and know all about the God's Mac, the mac and cheese that has sprinkled with Grippo's barbecue potato chips. And that was brought to us. Burl tasted it at... Where's our Burl thing at? There it is. Now I feel like we can talk about Burl. Burl had some of this at Oktoberfest, I believe, came back to me and our then host, we won't mention his name, and said, Paul Danner Jr., by the way.
He's a beloved founder,
but it's
a
whole new day. I'm totally kidding.
Beloved founder, whole new day.
And he's like, you got to try this God's Mac. And I was like, God's Mac or God's Smack? And so then Burl over the weekend found it again at Taste of Cincinnati, bought it again. There it was in our text message, sending us a photo, of a lovely glowing photo of God's Mac.
So, all right. So neither one of us have had it yet. Is that right?
No, we haven't.
Okay. So could you guys tweet at Burl and tell him to take Jason and I to lunch there?
Expense account.
Uh-huh. Exactly.
No, I'm kidding.
Think we should say now, next week, Jason's going on vacation. I mean, I hate when he's not in the office.
It when I'm on vacation because I just like going to the beach and doing nothing.
Yeah, me too, actually. It's my favorite thing in the world, pretty much.
Going to Hilton Head.
You know, I used to live in Fort Myers.
I know you
before
did.
Before I came here.
No Fort Myers for me. That place is nuts.
So Burl's going to be the co-host next week. And so this is a great week for everyone to tell him to take us to Tickle Pickle.
Looking forward. I'll be looking forward to laying on the beach with my kids and wife, and my mom is actually going to be joining us. So I'll have my iPhone and I'll be laying there like a beached whale, listening to on next Wednesday, listening to the TSC featuring Burl and Sherry. And
so
I look forward to
Jason's it. Already in shorts and slides. I feel like he's maybe halfway to the beach right now. Yes. But to be
my
fair.
My office attire. Just when I'm working in the office and no meetings, I just roll around, as you know.
I'll apologize to Bethany in advance, Jason's wife. What do we think? Think I'll text you every day?
Yes, you will.
Totally. How about this? Let's, you know, speaking of, you know, going on the internet and, you know, tweeting at
internet.
Burl, if you guys, so we have a subscription special running right now, and that's my favorite one. And this is the one where I got most of my close friends who weren't already subscribers to get on board. It's $1 for 3 months. It's Memorial Day sale. You guys know you want to read all my stories. Last night, I love engaging with all of you. Last night, I actually cut and pasted a story and emailed it to somebody. But we need you guys to subscribe so we can keep doing this. And honestly, you know, maybe I'll thank Burl next week. But when we wanted to start something crazy like a podcast and do That's So Cincinnati, you know, Burl was like, great, we want to try new things, but it does take money. I'm sitting in like a podcast booth, feels like, I don't know, a space station over there that I couldn't even dream of running.
The Millennium Falcon.
But I love investments like this. And if you guys, subscribing matters these days and, you know, pay for the journalism that you're using, I'd really appreciate it. I do. I'm a subscriber, sustaining member of the local NPR. Pay for some of my newspaper subscriptions. If I get the news, I do pay for it. And I hope you guys will do the same for us.
With that, I say that we are sponsored by Cincinnati.com.
Was that too passionate? I don't know. Maybe it was.
Very passionate.
I do believe in it, though. And so, sorry.
Support local journalism. Support local journalism. And I know so many of you do. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. It's critical. You know, we're covering Cincinnati, and the local governments that we cover are making decisions that affect your daily lives more, way, way more so than what's happening out of Washington. And certainly we have coverage on that as well that's provided by the USA Today network. So we have everything. Sherry and I are both out of the political world, her as a city hall reporter and me as a political columnist. But we have two reporters, a team in Columbus. We have Scott Wortman on Hamilton County and regional politics. We have
Terry
USA Today Network
covering the opiate crisis,
and no one's doing it like we're doing it here in Cincinnati. So, just a good time to talk about local journalism and the importance. And I know I hope you know Burrell will be in next week, and maybe he'll expand on that. But let's now shifting away from our sponsor. I got a That's So Cincinnati moment of the week, and it is
So Cincinnati.
Ooh, that was pretty smooth, Phil. I set that up nicely, didn't I? Phil, do you talk or do you just shake your head? Yeah, okay. my father-in-law, who grew up, is very Cincinnati. He's Storz is his last name, very German. Grew up in Northside, one of seven kids, the only boy in his family. His favorite meal, he was for his birthday or on Saturday, is city chicken. And I know a lot of old school Cincinnatians will know exactly what that is. But when I married into this family almost 10 years ago, I discovered what city chicken is. And it's not chicken at all. It is actually pork. And it's basically these little pork nuggets on a skewer. And the story is, I'm probably not getting it right. I meant to ask Polly about this, but maybe we can talk more about it later. It is very Cincinnati and Porkopolis. And so essentially, if I guess a long, long time ago, it was hard to get chicken and buying chicken when you lived in the city. And it was very expensive. And so, but pork was very cheap. And so basically for a really good meal was considered this what they call city chicken. And it's, again, little pork nuggets on little wooden skewers like a kebab. But it's
I don't know about this. Where is city chicken?
You can basically, you have to get it at a meat market. So Humbert's, okay, or Bridgetown. You walk into one of those places and you say, I want city chicken. And those folks know exactly what you're talking about, and they'll take care of you. And it's awesome.
There's going to be a lot of eating for me this week. Tickle pickle, city chicken. Who needs to go to Taste? I'll just take all the recommendations that are coming from in here.
And I just like, it's interesting. It's like a treat. And so the only time I have it is my father-in-law's birthday party every year. So he's 82 now, and I'll look forward to his 83rd birthday when we have city chicken again. All right. I think we've rambled. I think I've rambled enough now.
We can never ramble enough now. Come on. And poor Phil nodded his head back then. But really, can he even get a word in edgewise with us? Can anyone?
I can't.
No. Unless we're interviewing, right? We're good listeners when we're interviewing. But otherwise, then we're talkers. I've said this before, too. Jason and I are like two old biddies because, you know, texting's the thing. Jason and I talk on the phone all the time.
Weekends, nights.
Yeah, my phone's dead by noon, then by 3. Like, I'm on the phone constantly. And so I think the best prep for this job was being my 16-year-old self.
It's just weird, like, because we're friends and it's like, I'll be in, like, the kitchen and Bethany will walk in and you'll be on the phone. She's like, she'll just be like, Sherry again.
Alex is the same way. Then those two like chime in on our conversations.
So hopefully that is carrying over into the booth here, and that rapport is just flowing. And the first two episodes with Sherry, you guys have been awesome, like are just doing fantastic, and the listenership is up.
Thank
and so
you,
thank you,
everyone.
Thank you.
I love doing this. Like, I can't believe
it's fun.
I wish I had been doing it longer. I love it.
Looking forward to many more. Anyway, let's get out of this, Phil. Phil's over there rolling his eyes. Let's go. Phil's got us a clock in here now, and yeah, we're way over. Anyway, thank you.
That's to be expected. I think that's why he got the clock. I don't know. I'm just a guess.
Don't forget, subscribe to Cincinnati.com. Sherry laid it all out. Follow us on Twitter at Sharon Coolidge, at J Williams Cincy with a Y. And make sure you're checking Cincinnati.com for all our coverage on FC, all our political coverage, City Hall, County, everything we just talked about. And Burrell will be here next week in this seat. He and Sherry. Whoa! One last thing for Burrell. They'll be here next week chatting with you. So definitely look forward to listening to that. Have a good week.